racetracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
I'm Colin Ford, and welcome to this week's edition of Inside Motorsport. Craig Revell and Peter Norton are out of the studio this week as they're at the final round of the Australian Procar Series taking place at Oran Park today. This is the last of the standalone meetings for the Procars. Of course, we've got other news from around the world, starting off with the World Rally Championship. We've also got news from the Super Trucks and the Australian Super Touring and Future Tourers from down at Calder Park. World Series Sprint Cars, the Outlaws are at it again. And other news from around the world and from the world of Formula One, V8s and everything else. So join us now for First Up News, Greg Strange from the BBC with the latest news from yesterday from the Rally of Great Britain, which is the deciding rally of this year's World Rally Championship.
Burns on his way, the championship within his sight, if not yet within his grasp. Remember, if he goes out or retires for any reason, the championship will still go by default to the championship leader, Colin McRae, who retired after his crash yesterday. But there's a muted atmosphere here at the service park at Velindra in South Wales, just north of Swansea, after the accident this afternoon involving the car of Carlos Sainz. We understand that 15 spectators and other onlookers were involved in that incident. They have been taken to hospitals in the area, mainly to the main hospital in Carmarthen. We understand that 3 of the injured have serious injuries, though these are called not life-threatening. But we do understand that 2 of those seriously injured are under 16. Obviously, in a situation like this, it's hard to establish the precise circumstance of the incident. Ford have withdrawn the car of Carlos Sainz after the incident, and as you can understand, everyone here is naturally shocked. The stage itself was cancelled, and the following stage was also cancelled, though we understand that the Super Special in Cardiff tonight will go ahead.
With his reaction on the events occurring in the rally in Great Britain, ProDrive boss and also the promoter for the World Rally Championships media activities, David Richards.
It's a very sobering moment when you do have unfortunate incidents such as this.
When things like this happen, do you sometimes question the whole nature of motorsport, or is motorsport inherently dangerous?
All sports are inherently dangerous. From what I understand, you have more deaths in rugby and horse riding than you do in any form of motorsport. So it's, life's dangerous. We just have to take responsibility for the organisation of events and ensure as best we can that spectator safety is at a premium everywhere we go.
But as your sport becomes more and more popular, and it is becoming more and more popular, undoubtedly you're going to get more and more people coming to the forest to watch. How do you keep them safe?
Well, this rally has very clear controls over the numbers of spectators allowed into the stages. They're ticketed into the stages, so you can't have an overpopulation of a stage. They're very well marshalled, every junction, every corner, with proper trained marshals to keep the spectators in the right places. And you will, unfortunately, just as we've seen in other sports, just get these extraordinary accidents that people don't anticipate. And we just have to hope that the people that were injured today would come out of it okay.
Will you be launching any form of inquiry or trying to find out what lessons can be learned?
Well, this is the role of the FIA, who are the sporting and regulatory authority. They look after all safety issues, and they're already looking into the matters now, and I'm sure that there'll be a very rigorous process to ensure that we minimise as much as possible any risk in the future.
David Richards speaking there with Greg Strange from the BBC. Yes, and of course the situation with the Rally of Great Britain was that in terms of the title chase before this final round, it was Colin McRae who was leading the championship on 42 points from Tommy Mäkinen on 41 points. Then there was Richard Burns in the Subaru sitting on 40 points, and then Carlos Sainz in another of the Ford Focuses on 33 points. Now, on the first day, Colin McRae went out in a massive and quite dramatic accident. It would be, as they say, the triple somersault with roll and pike, a degree of difficulty 9.9, completely and utterly demolished his Ford Focus. Fortunately, both he and his co-driver were okay from that accident, but that put them out of the rally. Not long after that, Tommy Mäkinen also crashed out in his Mitsubishi Lancer. Problems for him, so that took him out of the equation, which means that the only person who was left at that stage with a realistic opportunity to win the World Rally Championship, who was still on the road, was Richard Burns. At that stage, Richard Burns was fourth on the road and was looking quite good. As this, he only had to finish fourth, sorry, he was third on the road, he only had to finish fourth or better to win the World Rally Championship. Now, as it stands currently, after special stage 13, which took place after the accident, which we just heard the report about, It was Marcus Gronholm in the Peugeot who had a 1 minute 35.4 second lead over Burns in the Subaru in second. He then had quite a clear lead of 9.2 seconds back to Harry Rovanperä in another of the Peugeots. Then there was Alistair McRae in the Hyundai 4th and Armin Schwartz in the Skoda 5th. Now, interestingly enough, in that special stage 13 at the Cardiff special stage, it was Alistair McRae in the Hyundai who set the fastest time. As you said, a sad situation to see the fact that he set his fastest time in the Hyundai all year has brought up into a podium contention position, and he's just about to leave Hyundai to go and join Mitsubishi. So, as it is at this point in time, Marcus Gronholm is leading the rally. Burns in the Subaru is second. If he holds that position, or even, as I say, can go down to fourth, and will still take out the World Rally Championship for this year. The other contender who is potentially in there with a chance, but he had to win and have the other contenders not finish, was Carlos Sainz in the second of the Ford Focuses. As it is, his car was retired after the accident that we heard about where a number of people were injured. So, as it is at this point in time, if nothing goes wrong, and as we know in motorsport anything can go wrong, as they head into the final day of the Rally of Great Britain, is that Burns will be the likely winner of the World Rally Championship. And of course, he then moves on to Peugeot next year to take up his World Rally Championship aspirations with them. As it is, with the news that Burns is moving over to Peugeot, Peugeot UK have pulled out of the British Touring Car Championship, citing the expenditure that they are going to put into promoting rallying in the UK will be their component for next year. And things, of course, for the British Touring Car Championship, as Peugeot pulls out, the team that has been running the Peugeots in the last year, they're actually moving over to run a couple of privateer Lexus, which are equivalent to Toyotas here in Australia. And as well, they will be having Proton come in. They've got MG who's joined in, Vauxhall are staying in. Vauxhall, they've picked up James Thompson, who's running with the privateer Egg team. He's replaced Jason Plato. Jason Plato has been left out in the cold, this year's current British Touring Car Championship champion. So he's got to try and find himself somewhere to drive. And as they say, that's what motorsport's all about, people going left, right and centre. As it is, there's talk as well that there could be a couple of other teams coming in. There's talk that Honda will be coming in, and as well that Volvo could be moving in, but apparently Volvo's move into the British Touring Car Championship has received a slight delay due to the fact that they have got to rethink some of the components on their car which they've been testing. As it is, the European Touring Car Championship moves over to their new series rules for next year. So if anybody's looking for a good super touring car, and there's currently quite a few of them on the market in Europe, a number of them will be going to other championships around Europe, such as the Swedish Championship, which will be staying with Super Tourers for another year. Here in Australia, the Power Tour was on today down at Calder, and just going over some results. We've actually been trying to get hold of the people there for Power Tour, but the joys of mobile phones and answering services. But then here we do have the results. In the Super Truck Dash, over four laps, it was Joe Scarello in a Kenworth who was the winner of that, from Glenn Dobson in a man. Luke Cedars in a man, then John Bombury in the Kenworth, with Inky Tullock running out the top five in his Freightliner. In the first of their longer races over 12 laps today, which had 14 trucks starting off, Inky Tullock was the winner there in his Freightliner, from Glenn Dobson in the man, and Luke Cedars also in a man. In the reverse grid race, it was Glenn Dobson in the man who was the winner, from John Bombury in the Kenworth, then Luke Cedars, Inky Tullock and Rod Crick running out the five in the Volvo. In the Super Prix over 18 laps, it was Inky Tullock in the Freightliner who was the winner, Luke Cedars in the man who was second, John Bombury in the Kenworth third, Glenn Dobson in the man, and then Graham Spencer. Also, they had running today the V8 stock cars down there at Calder. They had 13 cars competing there in the first race. Andrew Medecki in the Chevrolet Monte Carlo was the winner, from Richard Howe in the Ford Thunderbird, and George Elliott, also in a Chevrolet Monte Carlo. Tony Southwall, the fireworks king, he rounded off his first race with a fifth place. In the second race, however, it was Tony Southwall, the fireworks king, who was the winner, from Rod Crick in the second of the Fireworks King cars, then Rusty French, Richard Howe and Andrew Medicki finishing down in fifth place. In the Super Tourer Future Tourer races, it was Grant Johnson in one of the Peter Hills Motorsport Ford Mondeos who was the winner in their first race. Peter Hills in the Ford Mondeo was second, then David Auger in the Alfa Romeo third, Luke Searle in the BMW was fourth, then Ray Sidebottom in the first of the Future Tourers, his new Commodore VX, he was fifth. In the behind him then was Jamie Miller, so you know, not so good for him. In the second race it was Peter Hills was the winner there in the Ford Mondeo from David Auger in the Alfa Romeo, then Luke Searle in the BMW, Jamie Miller in the Camry, better race for him in the second race, and Ray Sidebottom again in the VX Commodore, rounding out the five and also top of the Future Tourers. A good field there, 19 cars, over 18 laps for both races, and apparently some good tight racing going on there down at Caller today. Hopefully we'll hear from the Power Tour people a little bit later in the show, if we can get hold of them. The old stories, as we say. When I get left alone in the studio, that's when everybody puts their phones on answer. So that's the joys of life. In other news this week, internationally, talking touring cars, John Lacey has decided that he will sign on for the DTM, the German Touring Car Championship. He is joining one of the Mercedes-Benz teams and will be driving one of the AMG cars backed by Vorsteiner, and as such will be a teammate to people who's such as the current champion Bernd Schneider. Now of course Lacey was looking at what his options were for the future. He's also looking at the possibility as well of maybe going into some sports car racing, but at this stage he said he's going to concentrate on the DTM and is going to quite enjoy that. He said the standard of the cars and of the racing he considers is just a thing for a retired Formula One driver. In some other touring car news this week, of course, one of the things hitting the headlines was the situation with the Gibson Motorsport team, or what shall we call them? People are asking what's going on over there. Well, apparently the name of the game was that Fred Gibson was only acting in a managerial role with Gibson Motorsport, despite the fact the team carried his name. And what will be happening now is the fact that Bob Forbes, who is apparently the owner of the team and also an owner of one of the Level 1 franchises that has been used by the team, particularly in his case being used by Rodney Forbes, who is his son. Bob Forbes and Fred Gibson have split following a decision regarding where they're going for the future, and Fred Gibson is going to possibly sit out the year or similar. So there's a bit of a reorganisation going on with Ford Motorsport and the various Ford teams to see where they're going to end up for the future. So it's always, as I say, fun and games with the V8 racing here in Australia. There's talk that there is going to be a bit of a shuffle around, that people could be going left, right and centre. So we'll just have to see what happens with that. The other talk, of course, this week is that John Bowe is looking for his position for the coming year. John Bowe looks to be close to possibly having himself a position with possibly one of the other teams in the V8 Championship. There's talk that he will be, was talk that he could have been going to the Bud Racing team, and talk now that he may very well be going to somewhere like Brad Jones Racing if they extend to a second car. Well, in further Formula One news, as we mentioned, Ryan Briscoe has done his first Formula One test, and after racing for Tony Kart in the World Championship in Belgium, while it's not quite the motorsport, for Toyota Formula One car is a good starting point for him. So Ryan Briscoe has done his first test. As it was, they did keep the media and others away, and apparently he had 3 days of testing with 80 laps. And that was an emphasis on long runs and a full day in the wet, and so for him that was good. He said there was a lot to get through. There were engine engineers, chassis engineers, and there was a lot of feedback to give them. Engine performance, engine braking mapping, there was a lot to do. I was testing diff mapping and changing what that while I was driving traction control things, there was lots to do. I also had to play with the steering wheel as well. As you can imagine, for a young driver coming from something like Formula Renault, Renault Sport, etc., and karts where there's basically very little on a steering wheel to a Formula One car, where what you have is the equivalent of a literally like a jet fighter control, it is going to be something, quite a big jump up. Interestingly enough, this week Pedro de la Rosa has sounded the note of caution to a lot of the Formula One teams about the fact that Toyota could very well be the dark horse next year. The car that they have been testing all year long, and the car that Ryan Briscoe has been testing, is actually only a test car and will be replaced by a completely new design car for the start of the 2002 Formula One World Championship, starting in Melbourne, of course, the Melbourne Grand Prix, Australian Grand Prix, early next year. So things are looking quite interesting there with the complete other change. And of course, Toyota have been putting big dollars and a lot of activity into getting that in place. Of course, the other news which came through this week was the fact that in terms of the Ferrari team, they're talking about lining up for the first couple of races. They're planning to possibly race their 2001 cars in the first three races of 2002, the Australian-Malaysian Grand Prix. McLaren, Mercedes and BMW Williams Formula 1, by contrast, have said that they will have brand new cars available for the start of their 2001 campaigns. This could give them an advantage early on over the older Ferrari in the early races, but the Italian team had...
Thanks, Colin, and welcome to Oran Park, where we've seen the final round of the 2001 Pro Car Championship. Ben Norton, probably your first standalone meeting for the Pro Car Series. What were your thoughts?
Yes, it was pretty interesting days of racing here. Unfortunately, the crowd was down a little bit, so it means that a lot of people missed out on interesting racing.
The championship, though, wasn't all decided, and we did see a number of different classes coming down to the last race on the day.
Yes, it's always exciting to see the new champions crowned, and as you point out, it wasn't a done deal in many of these categories, so that added to the interest in the racing here today.
All in all, with the classes that were up for grabs, it was interesting to see how a lot of the drivers were approaching it, whether they were conservative or they just went out and said, oh, I want to win the championship and win the race.
Yes, we spoke to quite a few drivers here today, and the interviews will be coming up shortly, and a common theme through most of the champions is consistency. They had their eyes on the championship sort of starting mid-year, and they really focused on being consistent race after race after race, rather than risking all for the elusive race victory.
Well, we might start with GT Production, who, while Scott Loadsman was the fastest man throughout the weekend, he'd already got very close to wrapping up the championship, and it was race one where he did secure it.
Scott Loadsman put in a fine effort there to win race one and race two from John McElroy, who was second in both of those races. And quite a fascinating battle there between the Holden Commodores and the Ford Falcons, which I think is the essence of these classes, is it's production racing. These are the things that we can race down the freeway later tonight.
Of course, Brian Carr coming up with a third place there in race number one and two, and he was also the new driver of the Bud Stang.
Yes, Brian Carr, looks like some interesting things in the future for him, hopefully with some more backing from manufacturers and other things, and as a bit of a show of what he can do, he jumped into the Mustang in the other category here today and put on a pretty good effort there too.
All right, well, I had an opportunity to catch up with Scott Loadsman earlier in the afternoon.
Bring the bacon home today, and then we're off to talking to Rod Salmon. He's got a in the light series,
mm-hmm.
So we might be putting this one up for sale and moving into that, but we'll just see what happens.
Have you enjoyed this season so far?
Yeah, it's been good. The new car's been good. It's quicker than the old VT, and end of the year we're getting used to it, and we're setting it up better, and just keeps going better and better, so yeah, it's a good thing.
And with the new car, it's also seen a few new partners coming aboard in the way of sponsorship.
Yeah, we've got DataDot, Energy Fix, and they're on board for next year hopefully, so we'll continue them into the light series with us if we can, and with Ian Luff's support, who drove with us at Bathurst, and his young bloke drove with us at Warren Dray with us at down at Sandown. Hopefully they'll stay together with us and we can keep winning.
Have you seen this season with Sandown coming on board with the 500 and also with the standalone meetings? How has that been as a driver to see the way Procar's been accepted?
It's been good. I just hope they don't sort of get all the fast guys and novel them up too much with their, you know, so they bring them back so that you can't actually get out there and actually perform as a race car driver. That's the only thing I hope they don't do. You know, you need to get the car there and do your bit and get out there and go as hard as you can. And, you know, it's up to the slower guys to develop their car better. It's not up to us to slow down. So I think that's what sport's all about. You get the quick guys and then you go out there and try and boot them. I think that's how it should remain.
And with the classes, there's been great battles right throughout all the classes, and in fact in every race there's just been it's something for everyone to watch on.
Mate, we've got you've got Class B, which is going to move into our class next year apparently, so there's going to be B, C, D and E, and A is going to stand alone. So you know, we'll wait and see how that pans out, but that should be okay. It gives us a few more cars, and it also gives us someone to chase as well. It gets a bit sort of, when you get out there and get in the lead and there's no one there, it's not really racing, it's just running around, so it'll tighten things up, should be good.
And what did you think of the 500 and in the format with all the different makes and models back in that big long race?
Yeah, it was good. The 500 was good. We were racing against Nations Cup and A, B and C, and so you didn't have the E's. Not that there's anything wrong with E class, but you didn't have to sort of try and struggle around them. It was a pretty quick race, and I thought it was good to watch, and everything was right, so I believe it's a great thing.
Luke Gilton managed to come through a very competitive Class E to pick up a championship, which, well, he was an outsider to take, but came through and did it in fine style, winning in race number one, and that really set up a fantastic run for him. For local fans, though, Rick Bates was not having his best run of the season.
Yeah, that's right. Some quite interesting cars in that category. It's the Holden Astras and the Daihatsus and things like that. And Rick Bates was a bit struggling there towards the back of the field, but Luke Yulden really shone here this weekend, wrapping up the championship in a very narrow margin there, so that was one that really came down to the wire.
One thing that Luke Yulden did benefit from was an incident with David Russell, who was the leader in the Class E championship up until that time. He came together with Alan Holgerson. I spoke to him earlier in the day.
We just came into the category from historic touring cars and jumped into the deep end, so they say, but the car's been good. We took a couple of wins, took first race wins at Queensland Raceway and at Winton, and the first one here at Oran Park, so it's been a good year. So we can pull off victory in race two and give it a good finale.
Certainly, keeping it off the concrete is the most important job for ourselves.
And watching out for some statues to try and get into your doors. But anyway, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Darryl Coon, a successful season for you, one that you've enjoyed quite a bit.
Well, obviously, this year's been really good for us. We hit a bit of a purple patch early on, and we wrapped up one of the first three rounds. Then we got hit with some fairly aggressive handicapping, which slowed our success, but we still managed to come out on top, and we won the championship for 2001, so it's back-to-back championships in 2000 and 2001 for MDC Peter Warren Ford.
And I guess you should be going up to see Howard Martin and say, how about a bit of extra money? We're the Ford that keeps getting you a championship.
Well, maybe I should get you to give him a call.
But in all seriousness, during the off-season, what can we expect to see from you in a brand new 2002 season?
Well, next year we're working on some very exciting plans. We're not going to be running the XR6 that most of the fans are familiar with us seeing. That car's on the market at the moment. Hopefully that'll find a new home in the next few days. That's going to allow us to step on up through the ranks, and you'll see us next year hopefully in a V8.
And obviously then competing in Class C or Class A?
Too early to make the call. I'll keep you hanging on that one, but we are looking to move forward, and I think we've done about as much as we possibly can in the XR6. The XR6 has proved itself to be a fantastic performance car in the six-cylinder class. So we're going to move on now, and you know, we're looking at all sorts of things like T50s and maybe even a Konica run every now and then as well in the V8 supercars.
Now, of course, you mentioned Peter Warren Ford, who have been supporting you now for quite some time, but what about the other sponsors that have been joining you right throughout the year?
Well, we've had, over this year, there's been really a lot of companies that have got together and been a part of our success. The MDC Building Concept, which is based in Sydney, AMAS Security, which is also another Sydney-based company, Dunlop, obviously National, Ford Spare Parts have been a great assistance, and there's also smaller sponsors like Don Valley Bumper Bars based in Melbourne and Summerhill Crash Repair. We've really got sponsors at all different levels, and most of them are all Ford fans and just keen to get out there and see the Fords do well.
As a championship goes, winning the championship makes you feel good about it, but what have you thought about this year and the development of production car racing?
Oh, it's certainly been moving forward. Production car racing just seems to be moving ahead in leaps and bounds as time goes by. You know, unfortunately, we sort of felt the wrath of the parity commissioner this year, which doesn't make us feel so good, but it makes everyone else in my class feel a bit happier. But those sort of things, depending on which end of the receiving end you are, you either feel good or bad. But, certainly the opportunity to race on a national series crowd, it really is a fantastic feeling and makes you realise how many good Ford fans there are.
So Darryl, all of that's for 2002. We'll look forward to hearing that announcement on which class we'll be running next year.
Thank you very much, and I look forward to being able to make that announcement.
The next category of racing that was another interesting battle out there is GT Performance, the slightly faster categories cars, Group A or Class A and Class B, featuring models like Subaru WRX and the Ford Mustang, VW Beetles, a great range of things. And today it was Wayne Boatwright who dominated the racing, and with Brett Peters closely behind in second, both in Subarus.
Wayne Boatwright, of course, was the winner at last year's Oran Park round as well, and when I spoke to him, he was just thrilled to go back-to-back.
Yeah, it's great, thanks, Craig. We were pleased. We had a win here last year, so we're glad to back it up with a couple of wins here this year as well. So, and certainly from a team point of view, the new car looks like it's got lots of promise, and Scott Anderson, who prepares our cars and who drove the new car today, did an absolutely sensational job.
It has been quite an interesting year for all the competitors. How have you seen the last 12 months of Pro Car Racing?
Well, I think it's obviously getting bigger and better. We've had everything this year. We've had a lot of controversy around some of the entrants. We've had some very, very hard and close racing. But this year's been all about consistency. We've missed a couple of rounds early in the season. We had an engine failure at Adelaide, blew the gearbox up while we were leading the race at Wakefield Park. And if it hadn't been for that, in fact, if we'd had taken a couple of wins at Wakefield Park, we'd actually won the championship by 3 points. So it just shows you that the championship is all about consistency, and Brett Peters has done a sensational job of being exactly that all year.
As you look towards the future, of course, a few competitors moving up to Nations Cup, and a couple with brand new Evos and brand new cars all on the way, all being built. It's going to make for a very interesting 2002.
Yeah, 2002 season in GT Performance is going to be awesome. There are a whole bunch of new Evo 7s on the way. I think we'll see VW arrive with some new Golfs, which will obviously be very competitive. We'll be there, hopefully, with the new model Subarus, and I think the Mazdas will be a real force to be reckoned with next year. So I think next year's GT Performance category running as probably Class A only will be an absolutely sensational year.
I guess you're looking forward to it. With the second car in the Sainsbury Motorsport team, will that be sold off now, or you'll be running a two-car team for 2002?
We're not quite sure yet, Craig. As you know, everything depends on budget in motorsport, so we're out there busily trying to find some more sponsors to top out the support that we have from people like Altiris and Compact. So we're not quite sure yet whether we'll be running a one or two-car team next year. And at this stage, we're hoping to continue to develop the new car and make sure that's as competitive as it can be at the beginning of next season.
Well, the Altiris team, if you look at it that way, has had three cars running this week again with, of course, an entry in the Utes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've added Sarah Hulu in the Brute at Indy, and Sarah's done a great job today. The Brute's quite a thing to get a handle on after Sarah came out of Daewoo, so obviously the Brute's a very different proposition. I haven't actually had a chance to drive the thing yet, but I'm told they like driving a fast HQ. Sarah's done a great job, and as you say, we've expanded the car to three teams. The team to three cars this weekend, so that's been a challenge for our crew.
Well, congratulations on a successful weekend here at Oran Park. I guess being a local boy here, it was your home track, but you would have liked to see more people along.
Yeah, it was. I'm not sure what the crowd was like today, but we do a reasonable amount of testing and develop here, so I guess it is our local track to some extent.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Craig.
At the end of the weekend, though, Brett Peters did pick up the championship, and of course he was leading, but there was a lot of things that could have gone wrong for him today, but he managed to keep the car clean, and even with the two Altiris cars that were in the competition, they weren't able to stop him.
Yes, that's right. He really spoke a lot about being consistent throughout the whole year, and that was the key to his championship, and we caught up with Brett a little bit earlier.
It's been quite a long season, but a lot of planning went into it, and certainly we sat down at the start of the year and chose what we thought was the right car, and that's proved to be good. I obviously chose the right team. Unbelievable, these guys. They've all been in motorsport a long time, but we've pulled it all together, and Rod Dawson from Radspeed, who's really the brains behind the whole thing, he's found a group of guys who have just worked so hard for us all season, so I've got them to thank.
Yeah, you point out it's been a long year. Any particular highlights or low points in the year that made it a pretty tough season?
Yeah, oh look, winning two races at Canberra. I thought that was the circuit I hadn't ever driven at. I'd driven at all the other circuits, so I thought that was the one I was going to struggle. But it just suited me, it suited the car, it was nice and cold, the turbo loved it. We had a really good qualifying session. Qualifying in my early Formula 4 days wasn't my best part of my driving. I would probably race better than I qualify. Worked hard on the qualifying all year, and Canberra, even though it was early in the season, I managed to put it on the front row, and from there the day got better.
Now, one of your main competitors this year has been the Mustang. How's it been fighting against a team like that?
I didn't have too many scraps with John. Certainly the times that he has been further back in the field or had a problem, he's really motored by me with, you know, literally what, you know, I was standing still. So, you know, I appreciate he's a very, very good driver, but I'm sure the car from where I sat was extremely fast. And I didn't have too many battles with him. There was no point. By the time he sort of really became a threat, I had an eye on the championship. It was best for me not to try and race him. Plenty of people did, and there was lots of biff and bash, but I just had to keep my nose clean and get points.
Yes, so it looks like the Subaru has been the car for consistency throughout the season. What attributes of the Subaru make it so good?
The handling, definitely. It is just a great little car. The balance of it is superb. From the day I got in it, it's just been fantastic. I've felt at home in it. Obviously a lot to do with the car, but a lot to do with the team too. The shock absorbers and the springs, these guys just know all about them, and the balance has been superb. Changes direction very good, it's got good brakes. We use endless brakes, and they've provided us with just the best pads all year. And it's not the fastest car, didn't get a pole position all year, came very close, front row a few times, but very consistent and great in the traffic. And probably the key to it, I think, was its first lap or two. I did a lot of Formula 40 in the early 90s, so between having a bit of racecraft and having a car that is just superb in its first lap, when I didn't qualify that well, I was able to make up a lot of spots.
Yes, and towards the end of the season, of course, we've now seen the new model Subaru. It was a bit behind you today. Is that something you're looking towards next year, upgrading a model or even moving to other cars?
Yeah, the new Subaru we've been looking at, because we've obviously got a lot of wealth of knowledge now on the cars. It would, you know, some would say it would be sensible to stay with that brand, but the lack of speed in the new car is one concern, and secondly, we're having, a little bit more joy in talking to some of the other manufacturers about some support, maybe even small, but support to maybe sway us and changing direction and brand.
And you're racing today. The camera house Subaru was consistently around second. How was the battle out there?
Today was great racing. That's really one of the key reasons why I made the decision to come into GTP. I've been basically semi-retired for quite a few years, just doing the once-a-year Bathurst bit. And I got a chance to drive with the colour scan team last year in a sprint race. And what it reminded me was that I love racing, not just driving around Bathurst as a co-driver. So we sat down and looked at all the categories. GTP was the one we chose, and today's racing was just great fun for me, and like so much of the year.
Brett Peters, congratulations on an Australian championship, and look forward to seeing future championships come your way as well.
Thank you very much.
Class B was taken out by Nathan Pilkington. Of course, he wrapped up the championship at the Honda Indy race, but he was not to be denied with a good run in race number one. But a blown tyre certainly put pay to his hopes of having wins in the final round of his championship year.
With nothing to lose, we already had won the championship at Indy. So we came here really to have fun, but it didn't go as planned. We wanted to at least finish the race, if not try and win them. But yeah, the first race had a bit of a mess up at the start, and the second race the tyre ended up blowing. So bad way to end the year.
What plans have you got for 2002 now?
We're still really unsure. We're waiting to see what cars are eligible for Class A and the rest of the series. I wouldn't mind trying to move up. car they need to, but all really depends on which car is eligible and if I can find the money as well.
You've been doing most of this championship off your own bat after we've talked about your quick steps up through the ranks. Now to consider going to Class A, how big a step would that be for you financially and in driving and ability?
Well, financially, it'd be a huge step. I couldn't afford to do it on my own. I'm going to need to find some support somewhere. So financially, it's a huge step. I'd like to keep moving forward. I don't want to sort of stall for a while I'm on a roll. I want to keep sort of moving up. I suppose money's a big thing.
Mm. Well, congratulations on the championship and all the best for 2002.
Thank you.
Tim Lay was another driver with the Volkswagen racing team, and he, last time he visited New South Wales, had the car turned into a speed hump. He was much happier to win the Class B category of GT Performance this weekend.
It's been a long time coming, 1-2, but end of the season, last race, we finally got it.
The year has been a pretty tough one for everyone at Volkswagen, and particularly the last time in New South Wales, in the speed hump.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's a shame because we had so much speed there, and to be taken out by a faster car coming from the back was pretty ordinary. But anyway, you got to get over that and press on with weekends like this. So it's turned out really well.
And for yourself, what over the off season will you be up to?
Probably just working and trying to sell cars, I'd say. But we're obviously going to go into Class A next year, so. We're just waiting for those to get those cars, and the boys are going to get stuck in and build them and get on with some testing and hopefully have a new fast car for next year.
You are contracted for Volkswagen for next season?
Oh, well, yes. Basically, yes.
You've come to terms?
Absolutely. So we're just, I'm sure I'll end up being there next year, unless, of course, I get the Lucy V8 offer or find $1 million somewhere. So I would say, they're a great bunch of guys, and it's really enjoyable. It's fun racing.
What about your experience over in racing in the Volkswagen Cup?
In Germany, it was a little bit difficult because we sort of got there and jumped in the deep end, so unfortunately we weren't ultra competitive, we were in sort of midfield, but it was a really good experience and it was good to go over there and meet everyone from Volkswagen and obviously go and have a race while we were there at a place called Oschersleben, which is a really good circuit.
It does show that you don't have to be an open wheeler to have a career overseas.
Absolutely. Look at a guy like Alex Davison. He's over there racing Porsches in Porsche Cup, Carrera Cup, and earning a good living and living life in Germany. So he's doing a good job over there. And open wheelers is everyone's goal. They're great to drive there. They keep you sharp, they're enjoyable. You get a real satisfaction out of doing a good lap in one, but unfortunately in Australia you can't make a career out of it.
For the Beatles, their last meeting in Volkswagen Racing Team, but will they be sold off as customer cars now?
I don't know what they're going to do. I'd say they'd be silly not to. So, with a bit of luck, someone else will have them next year because they're such a little attention-seeking little car, and people love them. It'd be a shame to sort of see them go to the scrap heap.
And generally now, you've got most of the bugs out of them, and a lot of the times the stops were caused by outside influences.
Yeah, it's been a difficult year just purely because the car was probably competitive to start with, but they made us take 5 steps backwards with putting weight in the car and so forth. And, only got to halfway through the season where we started winning races, We weren't winning races, it was just a really bumpy ride, There was a couple of accidents that weren't our fault. But you have years like that, you just get on with it. So, won't talk about the past, that's for sure.
Well, congratulations on the victory here in Class B today.
Thanks, Craig.
That's the championship wrapped up here today in some of the GTP categories. There's a lot of talk about next year, new model cars, new makes coming into the category and all those types of things. And it's interesting to see the new model Subaru was out here today performing quite well but didn't quite match the speed with the older model cars. Still some development to be done there. And also some interesting talk about new VWs and other things coming into the category.
That's right. The Golf will be in next year, as you heard Tim Lay say a moment ago, but one man who's stepping up after being the defending champion this year was Mark King, and he is, looking forward not to having to remember this year.
Yeah, you bet. We've had a character building year, and we've learned a lot of data about four-wheel drive cars. I'm looking very much forward to our new Evo 7, which is on order. It should be here for Christmas.
How big a difference is the Evo 7 over the previous models?
Look, the reality of it is it's a new car. With this car now, we've been running for 2 years. Just getting a new car on its own is going to be a magnificent advantage. But technically, no, there's not a lot of difference at all. There's a few improvements on the horsepower and torque, but it's only minute. So, yeah, that would be pleased to get into a new car.
Of course, all attention was on the Nation Cup Championship. The favourite was the leader, Jim Richards, who had the points advantage coming into this weekend. For Paul Stokel, he won all three races up at the Honda Indy, and he started the weekend by putting his championship chase in the perfect light with a win in race number one.
Yes, it was quite a fascinating race here this weekend. The different tracks fancy different cars, and here we saw it was really a power circuit with the Viper and the Lamborghini going head-to-head, and some pretty interesting stuff out there. Really was a test of power.
Race two, though, was to be the decider of the championship. Unfortunately, Paul Stokel coming together with Sandown 500 winner in Tom Waring, which then handed the championship over to Jim Richards.
Yes, it's quite interesting how in the first race it was a little bit processional as to the people really performed as per their qualifying efforts, but race two, reverse grid, that's when the action really started as these faster cars had to fight their way through the field. And unfortunately, that very nice looking Lamborghini came off second best as Tom Waring spun at the end of the main straight, and unfortunately that did put the end to Paul Stokel's championship bid. And it was Tony Quinn who came out on top in that race two from John Bow and Jeff Morgan with that Dodge Viper. Very sweet sound of that V8.
Had it not been for Paul Stokel's incident in race number two, he did everything he could to try and bridge that points gap, but unfortunately it was just too big. He went through to win race three after driving from the middle of the field.
Yes, very entertaining race, watching that Lamborghini cut its way through the field, and some really classy driving there, and fascinating stuff, and also plenty of other dices throughout the field. One I was keeping my eye on was Bob Thorne in the Jag, and its development is starting to really pay off as it was starting to mix it properly with the Ferraris and the Porsches. It's been quite a testing year for that team as they've had all sorts of engine dramas and things like that. This was the first weekend where they finally got some of their engine problems under control, and for once the engine wasn't overheating and they were able to get the full power out of that big supercharged cat.
One interesting spectator of the Jaguar's progress was the Jaguar driver, James Courtney, who was having a look at proceedings today.
And at the end of the day's racing in Nations Cup, it was Jim Richards, a sort of deja vu. He's been there before, but it was really Mr. Consistency. That Porsche is the consistent performer across all the different tracks that this series comes to, and he was really quite thrilled in winning once again, and we caught up to him shortly after the last race.
Well, the strength of the Porsche basically was the fact that they're a very, very strong road car, probably the most over-engineered road car on the road. And when you take them onto a racetrack, it's the same there. They're very reliable. We finished every race in a Porsche in the championship for the 4 or 5 years I've been running. I finished every single championship race. And, of course, that's what it's all about. You've got to finish the races, keep getting points. Doesn't matter if you don't win them, you've got to finish them. And that's what we've done.
Yes, throughout the year there's been different cars shine on different tracks. What do you think is the perfect track for the Porsche?
Well, there's no real perfect track for the Porsche when you've got cars such as the Lambo and the Viper and this and that. I mean, this season they have been fairly faster than us, and we've won the championship basically. The Lambo's won, 14 or 15 races, and we've won two. And the two that we won were two that the Lambo dropped out of and would have won. So realistically, you could have had a situation where the Lambo won nearly every race in the series, and our best result other than that was second. So, you know, to get away with two wins was probably pretty lucky, actually, because the Lambo failed to finish. But you've got to finish every race. If you don't finish every race, you're handing it to the opposition.
Yes, and you've won these types of categories, the Australian Championships, many times now. The extra competitiveness in this category now, does that make this championship a bit sweeter?
Well, I suppose it makes it pretty good, because we were totally outclassed at the start of the year, and as the year went on, it didn't get any better. So I suppose it's a bit special, because it's the last one I've won, obviously. Who knows, you might never win another one. So it is special in that respect, but the fact that the car was completely outclassed performance-wise to come away with the championship at the end of the year is pretty good.
Yeah, it's a pretty special win there for Jim Richards, Australian champion once again in the Maguire's Nations Cup category. Thanks very much, Jim.
Thank you very much.
All in all, the calendar was not complete of racing here at Oran Park without seeing the V8 Brutes back in action, and It has been a very interesting race, which will go down to its championship decider, Sandown Raceway, next weekend.
Yes, really entertaining stuff, those brutes. Wasn't a championship race here today. It was really more of a demonstration race. And for once, these guys kept it clean. Nice close racing, but not too much panel beating to be done, which is a little bit rare in this category. And we're very much looking forward to next year, where they're forecasting 32 utes out on the grid. That should provide some pretty interesting racing. And I think the panel beaters will do very nicely out of that one next year.
Well, at the end of racing today, we did hear from the CEO of Procar, Ross Palmer, and some of the interesting things that Procar are entering into in calendar year 2002.
Yes, the Australian Nations Cup Championship will continue, of course, the Australian GT Production Car Championship with its two divisions. Again, we'll have the utes getting into bigger and better things. Australian Formula 3 will be sort of teaming up on the card for each of these race meetings. And that adds up to about 130 cars, ranging all the way from Ferraris to Falcons and international single-seaters. So a great variety of cars on the cards there. And they really are doing the whole country, ranging from a support race to the Australian Grand Prix. They're going to the Indy Gold Coast. They're not afraid of the concrete walls up there, which is great to see. Sandown 500, one of their premier events, and Bathurst. And, most importantly, they're doing seven rounds of their own independent championship, which will be really worth watching once again.
Yes, and I know a lot of the competitors are looking forward to getting down to Phillip Island and seeing what their cars can do on that very open and fast circuit, and heading back to the Apple Isle, which is great for Tasmanian racing fans.
Yes, the poor old Tasmanians really do miss out a lot when it comes to motorsports, so it's great that Procar can head down there for next year.
Ross Palmer has certainly put together a big team of racers and performers in the Procar series. I had an opportunity for him to reflect on season 2001.
Yes, Craig, we've put a lot of effort and energy and Procar staff into designing a calendar for next year that we think will be an improvement on this year and deliver a lot to motorsport fans.
As well as having under your own control, of course, the number of different classes, you've signed an agreement now for 3 years with Formula 3, which seems to be the open wheel category that's certainly going ahead in leaps and bounds.
Yes, it is, Craig. F3 is internationally very relevant. I'm also on the committee of F3, and the way the committee has structured it, they hopefully plan to keep the cost affordable, and you know, a young Australian can become Australian F3 champion and hold his head high anywhere in the world with an internationally recognised formula.
A lot of people around the country don't actually realise production car racing. They see it in Australia as an understudy to other categories. Rightly or wrongly, they give that vision, but they don't realise how many drivers that have been racing exclusively in Pro Car this season have had an opportunity to race overseas. It's not just open wheel cars that race overseas, but production cars are raced in every country in the world.
Yes, they are, and the beauty of Procar formulas is that they are parity formulas. It's a new concept that was actually invented by Procar, and there's two types of ways you can go in motorsport. There's a development formula model, which is Formula One, V8 supercars, for example, and that's very relevant. That's a technical game, and but we've designed our series to be parity type formulas, basically to discourage development but to keep the cost under control. We call it the Procar way, much like the NASCAR way, and our concepts are to design formulas that are firstly cost effective, safe, and areas that can keep the cost under control is the most important thing, and I think all our formulas pretty much comply to that. And the racing is very professional, very close, very tight, and the level of professionalism, for example, you look at the Sandown 500, Nations Cup cars racing with Class E, CTP cars, not one incident, and so, you know, our team's drivers really, I think, are at a very high level.
We sat down and had a chat at the beginning of the season back at the Australian Grand Prix, and you said, oh, we're talking about Sandown, let's see how it goes.
after the first one, and you saw the reaction from the people, the reaction from the fans, and John Davison certainly took it on board and was very adamant about making sure that this race was a success due to what had happened to him in the past with it. How did you view it? Because it was your dollar that was sitting on
exactly, the... Exactly, yeah. It was a formative year for us, and we were caught short in the planning, but we had a massive attendance from Brocar point of view over 3 days, and we're now able to plan much more certainty, and we viewed it enough of a success to sign up with John for 5 years, to Sandown 500, and we think that next year this will be bigger and better, and there's a very strong possibility that the two-hour GT production race on the Saturday next year at Sandown will be telecast live, and of course the Sandown 500, which will be Nations Cup and GT Performance Class A cars, will be televised live as well. We're very confident we can pull that off.
This year has been quite a big step in Procar's development as an independent racing sanctioning body, with a number of standalone meetings. Some, I know Queensland, Wakefield Park were huge successes. Perhaps Sydney hasn't warmed to you as much as what you would have liked, though.
Yeah. Well, Eastern Creek is always tough to get a crowd, and it was somewhat disappointing, but you have to try everything, and I know they tried their hardest there. I think Sydney is traditionally very hard to get people out to events. This meeting here at Oran Park, would like to have seen more people, but you must remember it was an afterthought that we were originally supposed to race at the American Le Mans race, which of course was cancelled, and we scheduled this in later. But certainly next year going forward, we're going through some sort of massive reorganisation within Procar. We have new staff, new defined responsibilities. We have an events division that we're starting up, and an media division that we're starting up. And so, if you like, this year was sort of toe in the water exercise. Overall, we're very delighted. We're delighted with the cooperation of all the promoters, and quite frankly, Australian Motorsport needs successful other circuses and ourselves, and the power to sort of demonstrate that we can achieve and build on that. And you'll get the other facilities here we have at Oran Park. Tony Parrish has invested in that. He deserves to be able to run more events here, and that's the great thing, I guess, about having other motorsport series other than Avesco, which is a great show. And but you know, the fans want to see more, and they want to taste more, and they want to taste different things, and that's what they get, I guess, with us, and also the series like the Power Tour.
I guess when we talk to the drivers, if they're winning, the parity's such a mean thing, it's such a handicap to them. If they're not winning, geez, these cars are just too fast, and Procar's got to do something about it. That is probably one of the hardest juggling acts you have to go through your day-to-day dealings with drivers.
Well, of course I don't have to do that now. I have people delegated to do that, but I've certainly, in the formative stages of parity, I have to get involved in this discussion. But it's interesting because, Craig, I still drive race cars myself. I've been a racer for about a decade now, raced in the United States and Australia. I tend these days just to do long distance endurance events, but it used to be, and been around motorsport for 30 years, that drivers blame lack of brakes, lack of grip, the tyres were crap and they weren't up to standard, or the car was down on horsepower. But interestingly enough, Procar has invented a new excuse, and it's called parity. The parity is wrong. So parity will always be at the surface of any discussion in our series, and always be a bone of contention. But we have the greatest technical advisors who pretty much figure it out all mathematically. Normally we're not too far off the money. Occasionally something slips through, but in the main we've pretty much got it nailed.
Talk about a new handicapping system for the new season, which obviously you're looking forward to swelling this great discussion you do have on parity.
Yes.
But it could see us go in a movement. Are we going to see something like old speedway handicaps where someone starts 3/4 of a lap behind, or will we see horse racing handicapping where we'll see weights added and you know, obviously a handicapper's job is a fairly important one, and you have to take everything into consideration.
Chris Edwards has devised a mathematical formula for GTC, or the production class in C, C, D and E next year, whereby the Class E cars, the average lap time of the top three class E cars, Class D, Class C and Class B. So you might see Class E take the green flag and 15 seconds later Class D, 5 seconds later Class C, and maybe 7 seconds later Class B. And there's a mathematical formula design whereby at two-thirds race distance, the real racing and passing starts and gets going, and it's as much... it has been difficult to engender sort of enthusiasm in the media, although production car racing is quite good and quite exciting. We believe that this new format will make it even better.
One thing that certainly has worked as you've gone around the country is reverse grid for particularly the Race 2 in Nations Cup, where it has really sold everyone the whole seat, but you've got them sitting on the edge.
Yes, certainly, and there's some criticism from Nations Cup teams about that, and we do not do those reverse grid races on tight street circuits, and I guess evidence of the excitement of those races is what happened in race two today, and with the Lambo taking out the Ferrari, and you know, and there's a lot of complaining and whinging about that, but you know, my answer to that is drive within the capability and the limit of what you can achieve, and don't try to win the race from the back of the grid in the first corner on the first lap. And so some of the exuberance has to be contained a little in those races. And but certainly the rolling start format for Nations Cup is something that I believe in, and that has worked as well in Nations Cup, and we'll continue to use that as well next year.
Of course, that was something that we also spoke about at the beginning of the year, along with a lot of safety regulations, which you have always been quite involved in throughout your racing career. Have you thought about perhaps mandating a head and neck restraint system? I know you recommend it now, but have you thought, like Formula One, IRL, CART and NASCAR are all making moves towards 2002 to do?
Yeah, it's something that I'd personally like to have a good hard look at. I know that my son will be wearing one again next year, and he's going to do the Formula 3 season again next year, have a smaller compact version now. Darren actually survived a big crash here in 95 in a WRX. The car was actually 12 inches narrow over the flip-flop, airborne into the concrete wall, and I'm absolutely convinced it saved him from serious injury. My own head and neck system unit was stolen by an airline employee, cut it off my helmet on a trip to the United States, and I'm in the process of ordering another one. But I firmly and strongly believe in hands-type systems. It's the way of the future. So whether or not we can mandate that they're to be used, that might be difficult, but certainly recommendation, and we're currently doing work now, and certainly safety is an issue that's at the forefront of my mind always, and I would like to see us move to that. You know, there are liability issues of mandating something, and people say, well, you can't get out of a car if it's on fire, but quite frankly, the evidence is there that they save severe head, neck, trauma type injuries, and there's certainly a great bone of contention. I know the hands people in the United States, and the orders for hands systems have gone up something like 2,000% since Dale Earnhardt's death, and there's possibly no question that if he'd have had a system like that, he may have survived, and certainly they're looking at it.
Finally now, your thoughts on season 2001 through all the trials and tribulations that you've had to endure with getting your own events up and running, having the change in the calendars, of course. I would imagine for yourself personally, the not being able to go to Malaysia would have been a disappointment, because I know a lot of competitors were enjoying the fact that at Adelaide you ran with the American Le Mans Series, and everyone was looking forward to a bit of a jaunt overseas.
Yes, Craig, it is unfortunate. Of course, the events of September the 11th changed a lot of things, a lot of thought processes, particularly as regards to the Americans, and we were looking forward to that, but things happen sometimes beyond your control. We would like to examine that in the future when the opportunity arises, and possibly towards the end of next year we may have the opportunity to look at doing something like that again, but you know, things happen sometimes beyond your control. But this year for sure, we Procar, through its own Procar Champ Series event, has put a foot in the sand and we've put ourselves on the map, and I think we're looking for bigger and better things next year.
Now, for anyone that does listen to Procar today and does go to the Procar website, want to get involved in motorsport or stepping up from a club level to a championship series, what can they do to get involved in GTP racing and be involved with Procar?
Yeah, well, of course, Craig, we have something from everyone, from Class E cars in GTP through to Group 1 Nations Cup. It's just a matter of contacting Procar through email. Progressive's phone numbers are on the website. Staff are very helpful in terms of information. We're only too happy, bona fide potential competitors to answer any and all information.
All in all, Colin, a fantastic day here at Oran Park. The weather conditions were extremely hot. There was a good wind coming across to cool things down, as you've probably heard in a lot of the interviews. But all in all, the Procar Championship season for 2001 has been a great success, with all the competitors looking forward to coming back for a bigger and better season in 2002. And I must say, we've enjoyed being at the rounds we've managed to get to. But for now, thanks for joining us here with Oran Park, and we look forward to catching up with you next week in the studio.
So, Colin, that sort of wraps it up from Oran Park here today. Some good racing. Luckily, there wasn't too much carnage, although the Lamborghini is one that did suffer in that second race where it had the coming together at the end of the main straight, and it came off with a rather large hole in the side of the car, which they were quite rapidly repaired, and of course it came out and had a fantastic fight from middle of the field to take that third and final race. So yeah, some great racing, and of course some fantastic cars on show here in the Procar categories.
Of course, this has been one of the things that's been interesting for the Procar people this year, has been their standalone meetings, and up to now they've had fairly good crowds at most of their own meetings, but obviously this time around Oran Park, maybe people are all motorsported out.
Yes, I guess there will be a bit of scratching the heads to work out how they can attract a better crowd here to Oran Park. Weather was fantastic, all those sorts of things, but you're right, there's been a lot of motorsport on throughout the year, and of course next weekend there's more racing on from Sandown in Victoria. Anyway, we'll find out, and you know, Procar will improve their program over and over, as they always do, and you know, we'll see bigger crowds in future.
In terms of the crowd there today, the thing that struck me mostly about a lot of the Procar crowds that turn up is it's very much back to mum and dad and the kids in a very friendly atmosphere compared to some of the other events we go to.
Well, yes, this is right. It's a great package that they're putting on. It's not a one-category wonder. I mean, what is the main billing here? We've got the Utes, which are putting on a great show. We've got Nations Cup, and even in the GT Performance, either of those categories is a major draw card in its own right. And here we have them all on the one bill. Entry fees are quite reasonable. You know, they're doing all the things that they should be doing. So, yeah, this will grow into the future, and look forward to a really busy calendar for these guys next year.
Now, part of the news this week, of course, was the fact that Matthew Coleman, who was with the Volkswagen GT Performance team, had split with them and was heading off to do other things, potentially running a Porsche GT3, whether in Nations Cup or within the Porsche Cup. But there's a talk there, of course, with Volkswagen stepping up. There was talk of them running some four-wheel drive turbocharged Beetles. Has there anything more been said this weekend about that?
Really, the talk this weekend for the future for the VW team is to go into some faster VW Golfs for next year, and they think that will provide them a bit of a step up, and of course the Beetles, I'm sure, will be racing again next year in someone else's hands. They're fantastic to watch, the Beetles. They're such a classic style, and it's great to see them back out on the racetrack.
Yeah, always some great racing there with the Nations Cup. Of course, as you mentioned, next weekend the teams will be racing again. A number of the teams will be racing down at Sandown for the big finale there for both the V8s and for a number of the championships for the GDP. So obviously for some of the teams it was a case of keeping things nice and tidy, otherwise there's going to be some rapid work to get them ready for next weekend.
Yes, that's right. It was the Utes in particular who are on next weekend, and they did keep it clean. Yeah, next weekend should be interesting because there's some rather major announcements coming. I understand that Mark Larkham has signed a sponsor for next year, which is great to see that you know, the team that was Mitre 10 has struggled a bit this year with sponsorship dollars. We can look out for an announcement there about a proper sponsor for next year, and all sorts of announcements about next year's calendar for the V8s. You know, who will be the major naming rights sponsor for their series next year? Will Shell continue their very long-running sponsorship of that series, or will it be someone else? Carlton United Breweries is a name that keeps popping up, so that's something of interest to watch. And just some of the general gossip and rumours, I'm sure we'll get some more news out of that next weekend. Hot silly season that started already, and the news this week is that perhaps Stephen Richards is on the market with Ford Ticket Racing and Glenn Seaton having to cut their budgets back and perhaps run only one car next year. That's one that there's a lot of gossip about Ford Ticket Racing that's sort of denied, but I guess this is one that maybe actually coming about is that their program will be scaled back. Of course, there Jason Bryce was one of the big rumours earlier in the silly season, whether he would be back at HRT. That's calmed down. It looks like he will be staying. But the rumours around Cashwell Perkins Racing team continue to be pretty interesting there. Will Larry retire? Will Russell Ingall move on, even though he has 1 year of his contract left? And that seems to be a prime opportunity for Steve Richards to either go into Larry's seat or Russell's seat for next year. I'd hate to see Steve Richards miss out for a seat next year. And you've got to love that banging door in the background. We don't have gunshots, it's just the door blowing in the wind. Next weekend, plenty of action from Sandown, looking forward to that, and of course looking with interest to the rally over in Great Britain. What's the latest on that one, Colin?
Well, as we covered earlier in the program, the situation there is that Marcus Gronholm is currently leading the rally from Richard Burns in the Subaru. At this stage, the third place man is also another of the Subaru runners, one of those guys with a great French name that always have trouble, sort of Finns or whatever, with one of those great names. But interesting enough, Alistair McRae running fourth on the road in the Hyundai after taking out special stage 13, the Cardiff special stage yesterday evening. Of course, they're due to restart that rally sometime next couple of hours in our time. Of course, Ford pulling out the Focus of Carlos Sainz after an accident yesterday, which a number of people were injured. And, of course, the big crash by Colin McRae and his Ford Focus, which took him out of contention, and the crash by Tommy Mäkinen and his Mitsubishi. So really, all that Richard Burns has to do is finish fourth or better, and he becomes the World Rally Champion for this year. And by the reports that they had in the final stages yesterday, once Sainz had pulled out and effectively all three other potential contenders had pulled out, Burns was taking it easy, pacing himself nicely, and wasn't going to do anything stupid. Of course, as we well know, in rallying, anything can happen. We've seen it in previous years. We've seen Mäkinen clout a lump of concrete, rip out the rear suspension component, and again get pulled up by the police and told you can't go any further. We've had Carlos Sainz and Louis Moyer in their Corolla a couple of years ago catch fire within sight of the finish line and stop so they couldn't get there.
That's some of the classic footage. I think it was Louis Moyer who got out of the car, took off his helmet and launched the helmet through the back glass of that car. The disappointment must have been huge. And so I guess those sorts of things will really be telling on Richard Burns as he nervously goes towards to complete that rally.
Well, that's right. You can imagine that every little noise that Subaru makes in the next day's running, every little sort of snick in the gearbox, every little feel of the clutch, the brake, the accelerator, that just might start his mind thinking, is there something wrong with the car or is it me? It's going to be just one of those days completely and utterly on nerves. But then Richard Burns, he's been waiting a long time for this opportunity to take out the World Rally Championship and also for Subaru to win it again. So I think that he'll probably be a cool mind, let it prevail, He knows he's all he's got to do is finish fourth or better, and as it is, he's got a reasonable lead over the following Peugeot and the cars behind that, so he's looking good.
Yes, and of course all the Ford fans out there will be praying for some gremlin to creep into the car. But yeah, Richard Burns has performed very well all year, and this is a rally that he's won a couple of times. So yes, I think all the best for Richard. He will be a classy champion. And it'll be quite interesting. He will be moving to a different team next year and taking that World Championship title with him, which is yeah, quite interesting, going into a team and instead of going in as number two, bringing World Championship status with him. That'll be some pretty interesting dynamics in that team next year.
That's for sure. Well, thank you very much for your reports from Oran Park there today. Our little technical gremlins earlier on, as we're trying to get everything to work, but this is the joys of live radio, as any form of live entertainment. Things do occasionally go wrong.
Yes, it was worth putting up with those gremlins, I think, because we had some excellent chats there with a lot of the drivers. GTP production and Nations Cup, fantastic categories, and of course we will continue to bring you all of the news of the category over the break and all of the developing news, and of course a bigger and better season next year.
And of course next weekend, the big grand final for the V8s at Sandown, a chance for a few drivers who've got the opportunity to secure themselves particular placings within the championship, but also in Mark Skase's place, just to go out and drive the backside off his HRT Commodore, and a chance for some of the other drivers to possibly show what they've got in store for next season.
It'll be important to put on a good show for the sponsors, I think, particularly in the tough economic times that everyone says we're entering into. Yes, important to put on a great show.
Well, thank you very much for the show there, Peter, and we'll no doubt be back with everybody back in the studio again next week.
Yes, thanks, Colin. See you next week.
See you then. Well, that's all from us for this week from Inside Motorsport. Once again, the guys will be back in the studio next week, and we'll be back ready to let things head on their merry way once again. So from myself, Colin Ford, Peter Norton and Craig Revell down at Oran Park, that's all from this week from Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.